Welcome to Local Talk, the Friday edition on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, events, and places in central Iowa. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host for the hour, with engineer Mike Murphy, our steady hand at the controls, and co-host Mike Metz, keeper of the Prairie Winds Prairie. How are you, Mike?
Good morning, Pat. I'm a little chilled this morning. It was 33 there when I came in, but the snowbirds are down. We've got all kinds of juncos, tree swallows, our sparrows out there on the prairie. And I saw a white red-tailed hawk, which I believe is the Kreider's.
So occasionally there's a real black red-tailed hawk. There used to be a black hawk, but now they call those the Harlan bays or melanistic. Yep. But a Kreider's is a white red-tailed hawk.
That's it, yeah.
With just a minimal belly band, a little flecking, but yet primarily white with the big red tail. Interesting. Kind of a western bird, I guess you'd say. Okay. We're kind of always curious about what the music's going to be coming our way. Hey, October 21st, the Burning Sensations will play at 5:30 p.m., and this is for the Ames Foundation annual event, and it's going to be held at the Ames Ford and Lincoln dealership. That's at 123 Airport Road here in Ames.
Currently, it's 33 degrees out there with a high temperature forecast today, back into the 60s, around 64, and a low tonight, again, of 35. Sunshine, however, is in the forecast throughout the weekend with 59 on Saturday and 58 on Sunday. And the freeze, as you knew, was coming along, as low as 22 on Monday. Yet it'll be moderating to the lows, 40s in the forecast for next week. So it's that roller coaster ebb and flow of freezing and warming that'll stay with us for another week. Our sunrise will be 7:26 a.m. and sunset this evening 6:34 p.m. with a waning moon.
Later in the hour, we're going to have Dean Sampson here talking about the Alzheimer's Walk and candidate Joshua Herbert. Yet first, let's welcome Dennis Hart with a news summary from this past week from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
The plan to revitalize Lincoln Way in downtown Ames. New information about the death of an Iowa State University student. And the Ames School District takes steps toward establishing an alternative school. All part of what made news in the Ames Tribune this past week. Let's start with last Friday's paper, which reported that a New Zealand couple had created a virtual YouTube video about the Story County community of Slater's Flag. Yes, Slater's Flag. Dave Carter and Tracy Abbott said they love the train that's on Slater's Flag and that it represents the heritage of Slater. They founded Flag Session, a discussion program about flags on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram. The Slater flag was designed in 2013. The Trib also reported on the race for Iowa Secretary of Agriculture. Incumbent Republican Mike Naig is running against Democrat John Norwood. And there were two newspaper stories about TV news personalities, both on WOI-TV in Des Moines. One story reported that Nora J.S. Reichardt had reintroduced herself to viewers last week as a transgender woman. She had been a reporter there for a year, appearing on air under a different name. Reichardt said her colleagues and station fully support her. The other story was about Chinoo Herr, one of the morning show hosts on WOI. He made history in headlines last October when he was hired by Channel 5 to co-host the morning newscast. He is the first and only Hmong anchorman on American television. Saturday's Trib reported that the number of new coronavirus cases in Iowa had gone down to 1,853 the week before, the lowest number since April. It was the fifth straight week the state had reported fewer cases. But the number of people hospitalized with the virus went up for the first time in a month. 196 people were said to be hospitalized with the coronavirus in Iowa. And the state reported that 20 more people had died from the virus in Iowa, bringing the total number of deaths from the coronavirus to 10,097 since the pandemic started. Nearly 60% of Iowans are now fully vaccinated against the virus. The Trib also reported that domestic violence deaths in Iowa are on the decline this year. Between January and August, 12 people were killed around the state as a result of domestic violence, compared with 17 deaths over the same period last year. Overall, last year, 20 people died as a result of domestic violence, the highest number in Iowa since 2006. There was also word that Valley West Mall in West Des Moines is headed for the auction block. A district judge approved foreclosure of the property and ordered that it be auctioned by the Polk County Sheriff's Office. This after U.S. Bank filed suit in May against the struggling real estate property. The property owner, Watson Centers of Minneapolis, was said to be more than $3 million behind in payments. The sale of Valley West is at least 2 months away. The 47-year-old mall was once the Des Moines Metro's premier shopping location, but it's been struggling for years, especially since the rival Jordan Creek Town Center opened a few miles away in 2004. And the Trib had front-page pictures of the annual Witches Walk in downtown Ames on Thursday. At least 20 downtown businesses were open late, and each offered their own specials and treats for the Halloween witches who stopped in. Sunday's Trib had word about the televised debate between Iowa Republican incumbent U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley and his Democratic Party opponent Mike Franken. The two criticized each other for being too extreme on issues from abortion to immigration. Grassley said he would not support legislation to federally ban abortion after 15 weeks with some exceptions. He said he wants to give states time to pass abortion legislation before considering any federal actions. Franken said he supports taking federal-level action to support abortion rights and denied Grassley's comment that he, Franken, wants abortion available to the last minute at birth. Franken said he disagreed with Grassley's claim that he does not want strong border security. The candidates also said they both needed time to review President Biden's announcement of a pardon for all federal offenses for simple marijuana possession. The Trib also reported on two Nevada High School alumni who have teamed up to try to increase the number of affordable homes in their hometown. Scott Henry and B.J. Stokesbury are planning 33 single-family lots geared toward workforce housing. Home prices would range from the upper $200,000 to the lower $300,000. The ranch-style homes would be 1,300 to 1,500 square feet. The homes would be built in the northwest part of Nevada, an area that now is a soybean field owned by the Henry family's Longview Farms. The Trib also had word that Iowa State University has plans for a year-long tribute to the athlete after whom the Cyclones football stadium is named. Jack Trice was the black ISU student and football player who died in 1923 from injuries he suffered in his second collegiate football game. Jack Trice Stadium is the only Division I Football Bowl subdivision college stadium with a black person as its namesake. The university's year-long commemoration of Jack Trice starts this month with the installation of a sculpture on the north side of the stadium. Other events include the renaming of a section of South 4th Street to Jack Trice Way, an exhibition about Trice at the Christian Peterson Art Museum on campus next year, and throwback football uniforms to be featured at a Cyclones home game next year. And, of course, the Trib's website had word about Iowa State's home football game last Saturday against Kansas State University at Jack Trice Stadium. Kansas State won 10-9. Tuesday's paper reported that with climate change causing more extreme weather across Iowa, such things as intense rainstorms, floods, droughts, and derechos, experts say Iowans have never needed trees more. The state lost 7 million trees during the 2020 derecho, the most damaging thunderstorm in American history. Experts say trees can help offset severe weather tied to a warming planet. Trees cool air by releasing water vapor from their leaves and shading the land underneath them. They also absorb lots of water during thunderstorms, reducing flooding, and their roots hold soil in place, keeping it from washing away. The Trib also reported on agriculture startup companies that are offering farmers a new source of nitrogen, which is a key ingredient for corn. The new source? Minuscule gene-edited microbes that cling to a plant's roots, pull nitrogen from the air, and convert the nutrient to a form the crop can absorb. That allows farmers to cut back on the amount of synthetic fertilizer they apply to a field without losing yield. And the Trib reported that eating earlier in the day might be good for all of us, and eating all our meals within a 10-hour period could also be healthier. Those who eat meals later in the day are hungrier, burn calories at a slower rate, and have body changes that promote fat growth. The bottom line from this latest wave of research on eating? Eat breakfast earlier and eat your last meal of the day no more than 10 hours later. So what are you waiting for? Wednesday's paper reported that the Iowa State University student who was found dead in August at an off-campus apartment complex did not die as the result of a crime. 20-year-old Emma Timmer of Ames was found on a neighbor's balcony at an apartment complex in the 400 block of Welch Avenue. The balcony was underneath Timmer's own balcony. The state medical examiner conducted an autopsy, which showed her injuries are consistent with a fall from the balcony above, and that those injuries caused her death. Ames police said there's been no evidence that suggests criminal activity had anything to do with her death. The Trib also reported that the Ames School Board had approved an agreement for the district to acquire the former Beloit Residential Treatment Center by mid-February of next year to be the home for an alternative learning center. Lutheran Services in Iowa had closed the Beloit facility last year. The school district voted to buy the property at 1323 Northwestern Avenue in Ames for $2,625,000 and to close on the sale after a 90-day study period to review the property. That means closing would take place by February 10th of next year. The sale would be paid for with physical plant and equipment money. There was also a story about the suicide of a 15-year-old boy in rural northeast Polk County early this month. The teenager's family said he had suffered from depression and anxiety and that they had tried to get the help he needed, but instead, they said, they faced roadblocks in Iowa's mental health system for children. Experts say that system is under greater strain in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic as more children struggle with mental illness. And the Trib reported on a meeting this past Monday by the State Department of Revenue, a closed-door meeting to decide whether the public can get to know details over a fight for taxes between the state and the world's biggest ethanol company. Lawyers for that company, Poet, have argued that documents submitted to the Department of Revenue are exempt from the state's open records law. Yesterday's paper reported on the giant development project planned for Lincoln Way between Kellogg and Clark in Ames. The city is working with developers to pull together the $150 million project. The council will vote on the development agreement October 25th. The city would pledge $42 million in tax increment financing over 20 years to help get it built. The project will include a boutique hotel and conference center, a private parking garage with more than 400 spaces, a mixed-use building with thousands of feet of retail space and 130 apartment units, an open-air commercial plaza, and more. Construction would be done in two phases, starting in 2024 and be finished by 2028. The Trib also reported on Democratic gubernatorial candidate Deidre DeGeer's uphill fight to defeat Republican incumbent Governor Kim Reynolds in next month's election. DeGeer is trailing Reynolds in polls. And that is your summary of the past week's news from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart. Thanks for listening. Now, don't even think about touching that dial, because there's plenty more good listening still ahead on Local Talk and on KHOI throughout the day and evening. As for me, I'm planning to take the weekend off now, but promising to pay a return visit to Local Talk on Monday morning at 7, when I'll have word on what's been making news all around Iowa. I hope you can be here as well. Between now and then, let's both try to have a safe, healthy, and happy weekend.
Mañana y desperté cantando blues. Amaneció esta mañana y desperté cantando blues. Quizás me hubiera gustado contar lo que pensabas tú. Yo ya no puedo esta música dejar. No puedo. Blues solamente con tres tonos nada más.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Week in the News, and that was Boda Fago, Slide Blues, in honoring the last day of Hispanic Heritage Music on KHOI Community Radio. Let's welcome Dean Sampson. Hi, Dean.
Well, good morning. How are you this morning?
Great today. Good to have you with us. And let's learn about your Alzheimer's walk.
Okay. It's going to take place tomorrow morning out at the research park. We're going to be meeting at 8 o'clock for registration at the CPMI Event Center, which is located at 2321 North Loop Drive in the Research Park. We're expecting, right now, I think we have 532 registered walkers, and I believe it's right around 40. Okay, I got my notes here, but I just have to catch up with them.
But this is not the first time you've had the walk. How many years have you done this, Dean?
I've done this now. This will be my sixth year. It started when my wife was diagnosed with Alzheimer's or dementia, probably back in around 2015. And, you know, she had short-term memory probably since 2009. It was a time in which we were still able to do a lot of things together. We did a lot of traveling and everything else too, but it got to a point there at one time or another that I really couldn't leave her alone or anything else either. So, but her and I used to walk 3 miles a day. And so it was always a good time to do that. But then eventually she just couldn't do that walk anymore. But we had, I think it was probably in 2017 is when I really noticed that I couldn't really leave her alone. So I did take her down to Heartland quite a few times at the adult daycare center, and she was able to be with them and do activities with them and everything else too. And if it was times before that they'd open, I'd have somebody come into the house and take care of her when I had to go do something else too. So, yeah.
Dean, good morning. This is Mike Metz. I was wondering.
Hi, Mike.
Yeah, it's good to see you. It's been a while. Was wondering about the walk itself. How long is that for most folks? I know folks are going to be walking, what, in individuals, or are they going to be in groups?
You can be in groups. It's a two-mile walk. We take off from the CPMI Event Center and then walk the route on the east side of Research Park. We go up around Tedesco Park and then return back that way.
Oh, that'll be a beautiful walk for those folks. Go ahead, Pat.
Yeah, for those that aren't familiar, that Tedesco Research Park walking area is really quite a beautiful amenity for Ames. And this is really, you've got a pretty good forecast. Sunshining in the morning.
That's what I'm looking forward to, because there have been some times when we have walked in rain and everything else too. So, but it's always a fun day. Mm-hmm. We also have along the path, we'll have signs encouraging people, telling more things about Alzheimer's. There's also what is called a promise garden flowers. And there's five different color of these pinwheels that will be there, and the people can take them with them during this walk. But the blue represents someone who is living with Alzheimer's or dementia. The purple is for those who have lost someone to the disease. I'll be carrying the purple this year because my wife did pass away a year ago last May.
Oh, sorry to hear that. This is a topic that's affecting more and more of us, just either directly or indirectly.
It sure is. Currently, there are more than 5 million people in the United States that are affected by this disease. And by the year 2050, they expect that could be up to 16 million people. So, yes, it does affect everybody. I've had the opportunity to talk to groups, and I've had the opportunity to spend time down at the farmers market trying to get out registrations and everything else, too. And it's surprising how many people are really affected by the people that have had family members that are part of this too.
Dean, on the way this works is you receive pledges, correct, from individuals for the walk
right.
itself. How does one go about doing that?
Well, you can go to alz.org/walk and then search for Ames, Iowa. And then from there, if you want to go register for yourself, you can do that. Or if you want to join a team like mine, just put in my name, Dean Sampson, and the donations will go to my team. I currently have, I had set a pretty high goal of $7,500 for my walk this year. And I'm currently at about a little over $4,100. But again, I think, and I don't know, Pat, if you know this, but I think my fall fundraising this year has been to walk or drive to and walk all the streets of Story County, towns and cities.
Uh-huh.
And I have completed 10 of those, just started Story City, got the north side of Story City done on Wednesday, and hope to get the other part done here shortly, and then I'll have Huxley and Nevada to do. But yeah. I've accumulated about almost 59 miles in that short time.
Wonderful.
Of walking.
Wonderful. How would people recognize you? Are you actively outreaching during the walk?
Yeah. I am. I've made a little, I guess you'd say, sandwich board sign that I have that's on my front and back, explaining the fact that I'm walking all the streets in Story County for Alzheimer's, and then give them a little bit of information about how they can donate or how they can join the teams and various things like that, too.
Do you have an image of that or a picture of that you could forward? That'd be a nice thing to include with our, you know, the summary of today's program. And when people will see that, I'm sure it's got the website on it prominently. I presume alz.org/walk and
ORG, right, yeah.
And then
yeah.
scroll down to find the Ames group or community and yourself. And now, the $7,500, how is that money earmarked for certain research?
It's mainly set up to take care of it does for further the care and support and research efforts of the Alzheimer's Association. And it is a nonprofit organization, and so all donations are tax deductible. People that do sign up, and if they do raise a minimum of $100, they can receive then a T-shirt. And another thing is that we can have, and we do have pets, strollers, and bicycles that are allowed. However, no skateboards or inline skates and wheelie footwear are allowed on this walk.
Oh, okay.
But so far, I started to tell you earlier that we have 367 participants and 77 teams signed up so far and have raised a little over 71,000 of the 120,000 that we're hoping to raise. a lot of times the people that are signing up and are registered, but they'll bring in their donations on the day of the walk too. So we'll probably see that significant growth there too.
So there's a folks could sign up at the site if necessary. Is that correct, Dean?
Yes, they can.
Yeah, and then you have a type of there's a rally, kind of get everybody stoked up, and then you go for the walk after that.
Right. The registration's at 8, and then at 9 o'clock we'll have a opening ceremony, which will include a little bit of a background as to what's going to take place during the walk, but it also includes a personal testimony by one of the caregivers of an Alzheimer's patient. And then we'll have Cy there. We'll have cheerleaders there. It's a real festive event. Well, and then the walk will take place then after that at about 9:30.
Well, Dean, we've got a few minutes, but I'm very intrigued and complimentary of your commitment to go to all the communities in Story County. Is there any incident or anybody that you've met along the way that kind of comes to mind that you'd like to share with us?
Yeah, I was walking in Maxwell, and one young man was on his moped riding around, and he kept going around me and stuff, and finally he came up to me straightforward, and he says, "Wait a minute, I got to read your sign a little bit more." And so I let him read, and it was a fairly hot day, and I forgot my water bottle. But as I walked around a little bit further later, he came by then with a nice cold bottle of water for me, and he told me that he really was encouraged by what I was doing. And then up at Story City, as I was walking, I'd stopped in at the Dairy Queen, and there were three middle school guys that were in there. And as I was getting ready to leave, the one boy looks at me and he says, "It's cool what you're doing." I thought that was...
Yeah, well, it is. It is very cool. And just, you're a wonderful addition to the Abe's community for engaging an opportunity for people to network and discuss and learn more about Alzheimer's as a disease and as an affliction and what positive steps people can take to address this this entity that touches so many of our hearts.
Yeah. You know, and I have talked to civic groups and everything else too, and it's amazing how many people have learned of what there is to do to help some of these people that are afflicted with this disease. Because, you know, so many times people seem to think that, you know, when they're talking about things that are of the past or have some hallucinations or things like that they should try to correct them. But in reality, you're better off just agree with them and go along with them and say, yeah, okay, because otherwise you're going to confuse them even more so. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, those...
but it is a tough disease, and it's, Mike, I know you know very much about all this, and again, I was really pleased that you came on because I really admire you too for what you're going through with your wife too.
Yeah, Dean, that's for our listeners. That's where we met, and sure, what you're doing is just honorable. Thanks for continuing the walk. I won't be walking. I'll be contributing. I'll be on the road tomorrow. But
okay.
It's great to visit with you. And
yeah,
that's Dean Sampson. And folks, get out there. If you can't join the walk, there's always room for pledging. This is a disease that, like Dean has said, has hit a number of individuals. It's only going to increase. And we can fight that battle. And we want to figure out the cure for this. Thanks, Dean.
Right. Yeah, and again, that's the main reason I'm doing this too, because I'd like to see a survivor someday of Alzheimer's, and that's what the real purpose is for this.
Thank you, Dean Sampson.
Thank you.
And that site is alz.org/walk. Scroll down to Ames. Thank you, Dean.
Right. All right. Thank you very much.
It's 31 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to KHOY Community Radio on 89.1 FM. And I'm Pat Schlarbaum. On Friday, Local Talk with co-host Mike Metz and engineer Mike Murphy, let's welcome Mary Rankin, Sustainability Director with the City of Ames and Iowa State University. Hi, Mary.
Pat, it's always a pleasure to join you. Welcome to you as well. And what a gorgeous fall day. It was so wonderful to hear Dean on just before us.
Yeah.
I am so excited to say that my mother and I will be doing, we're at least at 20 years of walking together. And we will be doing that tomorrow. So it's going to be a gorgeous day.
Yes, and thank you for all that support. Yeah, that's a wonderful testimonial right there. Yeah. That's a beautiful thing, Mary Rankin. Thank you. So any announcements or anything that you would like to explore here? I see you brought a guest.
I did bring a guest. You know, Pat, oftentimes I think it's most important for us to pause and reflect on the things that have been supporting us for a number of years that have added such great value and impact to our community. And I know I come on a lot of times with the new sustainability events coming up and the new happenings and the new things that we want to make sure that everyone's aware of. But by the same token, I think it's so important to remind ourselves of the great resources we've had for a number of years. And that led me to calling Mark Ludwig, who is just a fantastic sustainability champion at Iowa State University. We've been working together for a number of years. And I wanted to remind folks of the great work that Mark is doing with ISU Surplus at Iowa State University. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Mary. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, Mark, you tell it best. You're the expert. You've been at Iowa State almost 40 years, right?
Close to 40 years. I'm actually 38 years. I've been in Surplus for 23. So it's been an adventure, an exciting adventure, always something new, things are kind of routine around here, but it's something different every day.
So around here, tell folks about what around here is. Tell folks about ISU Surplus, what your focus is
basically what we do is when departments are done, and that's campus-wide, all the farms, extension offices across the state. We also have the School of the Blind, the School of the Deaf, that we deal with their surplus as well. But once these departments are done and do not need their surplus or their items any longer, they fill out forms, and then we go out and pick them up. We bring them in. We process them. We make the decision best way to dispose of these items. And we basically have two sales a week. We also do online auctions, and for the things that we can't sell, then we sustainably recycle them or try to repurpose them in any way we can.
And so, Mark, surplus items, what could that entail? What have you seen over the years?
Oh, it's about everything, anything and everything. Lab equipment, office equipment, athletic equipment, farm equipment, whatever the university has, we have to deal with. I still remember I sold a pile of manure several years ago. That was probably one of the most unique things that I had to deal with. But anything that the university owns has to go through our office.
Well, that manure, incredibly valuable fertilizer resource, though.
Well, it was. They called me up and they said, hey, we got a guy that stopped and wanted to know what we were going to do with our compost pile. And I said, well, if we got interest in it, we have to make it public knowledge we have it for sale. So we went out and did a sealed bid on it. The local farmer was the winning bidder. He was going to use it for organic fertilizer and resell it.
That's a great story. And Mark, I know also oftentimes things that will come to you might include things that are left over after move out. Is that correct as well?
Correct.
Some of those pieces, lost and found items too?
Yep, lost and found. We deal with lost and found. Basically, it's turned over to our logistics and support services office. We have to hold it for 90 days before we can deal with it. Once that 90 days comes, then we put it up for sale. Some of the items that we're not able to sell, then we'll maybe take the Goodwill or somebody like that.
Sure, exactly. And I think that that is a good segue as well related to the different opportunities that you go through, that you really exhaust in ensuring that if there is value from these items, that we are capturing that value. And that is because, and correct me if I've got some more information to share, but that really relates to the fact that state money, federal money went into a lot of the purchasing of these items. And with that in mind, then we want to go through every possible means to ensure the value of those items even after their useful life at Iowa State.
That's correct. That's correct.
And once we determine then that they cannot be sold, we have actually entered into, I think, a really unique agreement with the Iowa Waste Exchange, which is through the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. As you said, we try to do our due diligence. We try to get returns for all the surplus items that we have. Unfortunately, there are some things that are unable to be sold for whatever reason. If we can't recycle them or anything like that, if they still have some value that we deem still has value to them, we cannot donate anything. That's policy that we're not allowed to donate anything, but what we have done is we've partnered with the Iowa Waste Exchange, as you said. It's been a great partnership. This way, it doesn't put it on us that if we do find somebody for something, why then somebody also comes back and says, hey, how come I didn't get a chance at that? With us just giving it to the Iowa Waste Exchange after we've done our due diligence, then they turn around, they go out to their network, and they find the people that want that stuff. So we've been able to divert some things from the landfill in large quantities. We've had semi-trailers of couches and stuff that we tried to sell, and we just could not sell it. It got to the point where it was going to be more money tied up on our end as far as trailer rent and labor and everything else. And we did try to sell it, but we're unable to. We turned it over to the Iowa Waste Exchange, and they were able to actually move that whole semi-trailer couches.
Mary, if I could interject, kind of a personal observation that over the years, when I first discovered this great opportunity to see what might be for sale to be repurposed from the Iowa State University, and it was like going through the attic of somebody's Victorian home, if you will. And so I'm sure there are things that don't sell, but I'm telling you what, you have made a lot of people's day with a reasonably priced unit that's quite often very sturdy, quite often made out of stainless steel, you know, lasts forever. And you've just been a great resource to kind of stumble upon once again and then realize, oh man, I didn't know I needed this stuff, but I think I could use that cabinet in my shop. Because it's well-worn and has many years to go. So it's not just things that don't sell, but boy, I mean, you go through a lot of items, a lot of equipment.
Yeah, yes, we do.
Is there anything else that's kind of unique, like the bucket of manure?
One other story we got, this was several years ago, College of Vet Med turned over an autopsy table. First one I've ever seen, and actually up close, so I didn't know what they entailed. But this was a full-blown autopsy table that had garbage disposals in it and full flushers and everything else. We got it right around Halloween, and it went out the door real quick, so I'm sure it ended up somewhere at a Halloween party.
Thanks for sharing that. Back to you, Mary.
Mark, speaking of the amount of material that goes through the facility, what are some numbers you can provide to folks? Because it is very impressive, as Pat mentioned.
Well, I'm glad you asked that, because I actually thought about that last night, and I come to work real quick this morning, looked it up. You know, I give you figures every year for your STARS and your sustainability information. And just last year, the fiscal year, we diverted through the sales and everything else, we diverted 1,296 million pounds of stuff, I guess, surplus. So we've got two full-time truck drivers, two full-time staff in here putting this stuff up. We've got a backlog. Our warehouses are about full. It's 7 days. I mean, it's 5 days a week here.
Yeah.
8 hours a day. It's just constant. You know, departments are turning things over, and it's our job to deal with this. And we also are able to give money back to the departments when we sell things for over $300. It's about last year we had total gross sales of about 997,000. We gave back 450,000 back to the university departments that they can reinvest into new equipment.
It's really a great full circle effect. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, thanks, Mary. Mark, I don't know if you remember me, but I used to work out at the diagnostic lab at the vet school, and we often come in before the sales to find something we could repurpose in the laboratory. And I think I know which table you're talking about. But in any regard, another thing that our listeners need to know is there's interdepartmental give and take. So it doesn't necessarily go out for sale. It can be repurposed first. Then it goes to the sales. But before that, those departments get to peruse, look at things to see if there's something they can use in their department. And KHOI has also participated in the sale to purchase some things. So for this nonprofit, you're a benefit as well.
Yeah, and that's why we're here. Our mission is that we try to offer this equipment to state-funded entities, ISU departments, recognized nonprofits. We have sales on Tuesdays for them from 10 to noon. They can come in. It's a little more laid back. It's not the big rush of people that we have on Wednesdays. But that's kind of the main goal. We're here to offer that stuff for sale for those offices and stuff for reuse. And then what doesn't sell on Tuesdays goes to Wednesdays from 9 to 3. That's our general public sale. It's on first come, first serve. And we average about 400 to 450 people a week per sale. And it's just an event.
That it is. Anything else, Mary Rankin?
Well, Mark, I just wanted to add that you do have for sale items listed on your website, correct? For people to peruse around?
Correct. We update our website every week. Every Tuesday morning, hopefully by 10 o'clock before our departmental sale. With our new point of sale system now, when we enter things in to the point of sale system, that automatically goes to an online listing so people can see what we have from week to week. We've always had that, but it's never been that unique to where it's down to every item gets listed. And so people are able to see things there. Also, there's another way we sell things. It's online auctions. Last year, I did about 559 auctions. It's govdeals.com. They are a online auction site that basically only sells government equipment. No personal items are sold through that website, but it's a great tool. We get a lot of national coverage with that, and we take the higher end things that we feel have more value to them, and we'll push them through there. And I think last year we had a little over $400,000 just in online sales.
Great. What was that website? One more time, Mark.
GovDeals.com.
GovDeals.com. Okay, that'll be on the website. Well, Mary Rankin.
I would just say the overall ISU surplus address, email, or website is surplus.iastate.edu.
Correct.
Okay, well, great. Thanks for a really an enlightening and an inspirational topic this morning. Mary Rankin, Sustainability Director, not only for the City of Ames, but for Iowa State University. And Mark Ludwig, thank you so much for being on Local Talk.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Thanks, Pat.
Thank you.
Esta música dejar. No, no puedo.
Let's welcome Joshua Herbert, Libertarian candidate for, and I believe it's the U.S. or the Iowa State Representative District 51. Hi, Joshua.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome to Local Talk.
Thank you.
Well, tell us about yourself and your candidacy, if you would, please. Why are you running for the Iowa State Representative seat in District 51?
I'm generally obviously running to represent the people of my district to promote personal liberty, lower taxes, and libertarian ideas in general.
Uh-huh. And how are you finding the campaign trail this year?
It's a lot more difficult. Majorly because this district is so large, and with the redistricting, it's even gotten larger than it was in the past.
Mm-hmm. Is this the first time you've run, or have you run previously?
Yeah, I ran actually when I was last living in Des Moines about a decade ago in 2014. I ran against Rick Olson, and that was, I'm trying to think what the district was at that time. I do believe it was House District 36, if I remember right. And, it was a lot easier to run in that district because it was a lot smaller. It was an urban district.
What makes you interested in politics in general, Mr. Herbert?
Well, I've been involved with the Libertarian Party of Iowa now for years. I've been on the state board numerous times. Mm-hmm. I formed the Polk County Libertarian Party and the Story County Libertarian Party, and I chaired them both over the years. I've been an activist for a lot of different causes over the years, and an advocate for personal rights and freedoms for a long time. And it's always been a passion of mine.
I see. Sure. So those are there other priorities, or would you like to include the personal rights and individual freedoms? Is there anything else?
Lower taxes. Obviously, every single libertarian wants to eliminate the income tax, and that's one of the big deals here in Iowa. We've already went to a flat tax rate, which I think is a step in the right direction, but I think we need to go further. I think if we're going to run a honest tax system here, which I'd prefer that we have no taxes, obviously I think most people would, but that's not realistic to just jump off the cliff like that and have no taxes all at once. But I think a more honest way to tax is to just have the sales tax for the time being. At least there's total accountability. The people see how much is getting spent, and they actually feel how much is getting spent with every dollar that they have to spend. And I think with that your average citizen would probably be a little bit more involved in politics and a lot more likely to really kind of watch what the government is doing a lot closer of how they're spending money and what they're spending money on.
Well, how would you involve or engage residents in the decision-making processes that could bring these key points about? How do you motivate people?
What's that?
How do you motivate people? Yeah, in that regard.
I think that would motivate them. I think that having a sales tax that would probably be, I would imagine, a few cents higher would probably motivate a lot of people out there to start being like, hey, maybe we ought to cut down on the spending. Maybe we ought to watch that we're creating another state police agency off of new traffic enforcement agency that the governor just put in a few years ago, and do we really need this? You know, if we already have Iowa State Patrol, why are we creating extra agencies? Why are we spending this money over here? Do we need to spend this money? Because a lot of times we don't need to spend this money.
Mm-hmm. Well, granted, point well taken. Now, how about conservation dollars? How do you feel about water quality and those type of issues in our community?
I don't really believe that the government has a role in that. The one role that I would say that I think we have is that we should deal with pollution with the constitutional amendment, whether that's to the federal constitution or the United States Constitution, I mean, or whether that's to the state constitution. That's something that we absolutely need to do, though. I mean, if you are destroying my air quality and you're destroying my land quality, you're infringing upon my personal freedoms. And that's something that we shouldn't have this ever-evolving set of regulations dealing with. I mean, right now, what are we doing? We're fighting in the courts over EPA laws, this and that. And if you had it set in stone in the Constitution how these laws were, you wouldn't have this ever-changing amount of regulations here.
I see. How do you feel about the topic of eminent domain?
On eminent domain, eminent domain is supposed to be only for basically protecting the waterways or usage and for creating roadways. I don't believe that this handing land over or allowing private companies to ship their oil or to ship any product or to take land away from private landowners and give it to these corporations, that's a complete total abuse of eminent domain.
Mm-hmm. I think you've touched on something that I've often wondered when Iowa became a state in 1846. You know, they realized our founding, and quite a few of them were fathers, and they understood that we needed a road system. You know, there was, as you say, dedicated funding for that, and our education systems. But in 1846, it seemed like these natural resources just go on forever. And they had the miscommunication that these things are also finite, and maybe we should devote some of our tax revenues for or protecting our natural resources, or at least keeping them in status quo status. But it was overlooked, you know, and then are you familiar with the I Will or the Water and Land Legacy legislation that was passed in 2010?
Yep.
To put it in the Constitution, how do you feel about how that opportunity to fund natural resources is relatively languished?
Well, like I said, I don't really believe that the government has a role in that. I know that we passed that. From my understanding is that it's not being funded by the current legislator. I'm not really a fan, to be quite honest with you, with the government, you know, even taking land away from the private citizens to set aside like that. I do believe that if you sold most of this land, you're going to see that most people are going to realize over time that one way or another, we need to set aside some of this land, or that it's good to have some land preserved to be in its natural form to allow natural species to cohabitate. I don't know. I understand that it's not funded. Really, it's not really, you know, it's not a huge concern of mine, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah. I appreciate your forthrightness in that regard. The topic of health care comes up repeatedly. Well, what's your position on concerning health care?
I don't believe that the government has any role in health care. I think that if you look back historically, the more and more it's gotten involved, The more and more expensive it has gotten, the more regulations that have been put in place, the more expensive it's gotten. Either the government needs to completely step out of healthcare or needs to admit that it's trying to basically take over the healthcare system, which I don't think we can do in this country, to be quite honest with you, for two reasons, which is, first off, this country's already broke and we're in major debt and we're just spending like drunken sailors out there. And also, most Americans don't take very good care of their health. So, I mean, I think any kind of venture towards that not only would go broke and would already have problems having funding, but I think that just Americans would go uninhibited at that point. I think Americans would probably get even more out of shape and probably even take worse care of their health.
I see. Well, we've got to wrap up here, but what are your three most important personal core values? I mean, you've emphasized a lot of talking points, good talking points this morning. What would be your most important personal core values?
My personal core values and what I believe, or do you want to know what my campaign?
Oh, I think it's all about your campaign, but you're obviously a key individual in that regard.
Well, I was going to say, I guess my core values are really to protect personal liberty, to try to make sure that we are using the government to protect those liberties and to make sure that people are justly treated.
Okay, well, Joshua Herbert, not to interrupt you, but you're running for the Iowa House of Representatives. To represent District 51, that's currently held by Dave Dayo. You're on the ballot in the general election for November 8th, and that's District 51 covers most of Story County and Marshall counties. Thank you for being on Local Talk.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's really a pleasure. Thank you so much, Joshua Herbert. Local Talk airs each weekday at 7 a.m. on 89.1 FM, KHOI. Local Talk is a training workshop as well as a show. If you have an interest in joining the Local Talk team as a reporter, the welcome mat is out here at 622 Douglas Avenue. Come join the Local Talk team by calling 515-292-2878 or go to our website where we are streaming live at khoyfm.org. And please remember to support this nonprofit station financially when you go to that website, khoifm.org, and find the yellow donate button.
KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is community nonprofit media in the highest regard. At community radio, you will hear items and stories you're not going to hear anywhere else. Community radio is unique in that way.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, with your summary of the news. And thank you, Local Talk producer Lynn Carey. Thank you, Mike Murphy, for engineering. And thank you for all that you do for community radio, as particularly You Name It on Thursdays and Monday evenings at 9. And thank you, co-host Mike Metz. Thanks to our guests Dean Sampson, Mary Rankin, Mark Ludwig, and Joshua Herbert. I have been your host, Pat Schlarbaum.
Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. The other artist you heard was Botafogo. State tone for Adagio at 9 a.m. Hope you have a great weekend. Enjoy those birds at your backyard feeders. And remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Thank you for supporting KHOI Community Radio. And see you again on the radio.